Hilary mentioned earlier, is not here this morning. She's down in, or up, I should say, in Chesham with Bethnal Green Mission Church. And she's doing several sessions this morning with them. I was down there with them on Friday and came back yesterday. And then she gets to have a wonderful meal. I'm going back to bread and pullet. And then in the afternoon, she's coming back, and I'm on cooking duty this evening. So, such is life. So the reading is going to be reasonably short, and it's the Bible, and it's from Luke chapter 11. If you want to follow it in the church Bible, although it will be on the screen as well, and it's looking at one woe. Or might be better translated, alas. So one alas rather than woe. So we're not going to look at all six of them, we're just going to look at one of them. And we begin to read at verse 37. And it's subtitled here, Jesus accuses the Pharisee and the teachers of the law. And we read, when Jesus finished speaking, a Pharisee invited him to eat with him. So he went in and sat down to eat. The Pharisee was surprised when he noticed that Jesus had not washed before eating. So the Lord said to him, now then, you Pharisees, clean the outside of your cup and plate, but inside you are full of violence and evil. Fools! Did not God, who made the outside, also make the inside? But give what is in your cups and plates to the poor, and everything will be ritually clean for you. How terrible for you Pharisees! You give God a tenth of the seasoning of herbs, such as mint and rue, and all the other herbs, but you neglect justice and love for God. These you should practice without neglecting the others. And if we could have the PowerPoint up, please, Akin. Hopefully this time it will work. Well done. We're having trouble earlier. Okay. First mistake of the morning was, if we can go back, whoops, can go back please, Akin, is this is the wrong reference. It should be 37 to 42, but the title is right, which is neglected, question mark. And we're continuing in our series in Loving the World and focusing in on, from the passage we read, the phrase, you give God a tenth of the seasoning herbs such as mint and rue and all the other herbs, but you neglect justice and love for God. Note, justice and the love for God are linked. But before we get to the text itself, we're going to have a little excursion into the word neglect and how it plays out in modern guise, although, as we shall see, it means fail to pick up in its original context, but in the modern world it has other meanings too. And the first meaning neglect can have is art. It can be seen as romantic, a cultural movement that was among the rich and wealthy, and they would have had to have been that to have the free time and the money to travel in the 18th century. And this neglect as art was fed by the grand tour of the ruins of Greek and Roman civilizations, and it fed back into Britain as the beginning of modern tourism that we know and love today. the desire to preserve and restore with the National Trust and the multi-billion pound heritage industry, where formerly neglected buildings and landscapes are to be preserved in their pristine ruination or recovered for modern use with heating, electricity and flushing loos, while keeping it pickled in aspic a la English heritage. From John Lemon's Semi to the newly acquired mining works of the Great Orme. These images are from a humble dairy on your left to the soaring aspirations of a sequestered and dissolved Tintern Abbey in the Wye Valley. And these were about ruin as ruin, covered in ivy, crumbling as a quiet reminder of the transience of life and the recapture by nature to be reabsorbed back into the landscape, which itself was a new idea. And yet this idea of urban ruin and our fascination with ruin means that in science fiction, for instance, you get the post-apocalypse of New York in I Am Legend, or Danny Boyle, who's a local lad, 28 days later, set in London. But this idea of ruin extends to the urban too. And in photography, there is quite a significant group of photographs about Detroit and its spectacular collapse as a manufacturing hub and a giant of the mighty motor car. And although there have been resistances created around urban guerrilla gardening, there's also a modern aesthetic of ruin. And although it might be out of bankruptcy, many of its iconic buildings remain in ruin. And this is a photograph of the main railway station in Detroit, known as Michigan, looking to the ticket halls. And to the left of that, to the right, your right, there is the Dearborn factory of the Ford Motor Company Assembly Hall. And it has attached to it a kind of beauty in the midst of neglect. Yet also in London, we live in a time of huge urban regeneration. Particularly here in the East, with the redevelopment of the docks since the mid-1980s, and recently with the Olympic Park and the ongoing transformation of the Lower Lee Valley. And here, neglect is contrasted with renewal and reimagination as a counterpoint to the increasingly erased and forgotten uses and memories of the past. And yet there is still at the same time a nostalgia for what things used to be like. Hidden corners that have escaped the architect's attention and the developer's ambition. These photographs are from the old North Woolwich Silvertown line, which fell into disuse in 2006. And these can be found on a website dedicated to discovering derelict London and includes walking tours in canals, cemeteries, abandoned churches, and underground and railway lines. And as a counterpoint to this is Crossrail, which has colonised and transformed the old Connaught Tunnel to be home for the £14.5 billion scheme due to be open in 2018. And the whole length has currently been torn up and relaid with a new station going in at Custom House. And there is an appetite for the before and after effect of useless neglect recovered to a bright new use and purpose. Yet there also remains neglect as big business, where tourists flock from around the world to visit carefully managed, neglected and protected buildings that are honeypots. And this image is of Angkor Wat that was recovered from the jungle, and Pompeii that was recovered from the pyroclastic lava flows that overwhelmed it. So those are some of the way that we use neglect and think about neglect. Yet, if you tap into Google the word neglect, you are much more likely to get child abuse and elder abuse sites. Neglect as the ruin of relationships of care. Neglect that is deliberate, cruel, actionable, seen as reprehensible, where people and institutions are to be held to account, challenged, reformed, removed, and on occasions punished. Many of the organisations designed to specifically address these issues are carefully set out to provide support for the victims, who are worthy of thoughtful intervention, support, care and healing, not just in the short term, but the long term, seeking to bring restoration and hope, sometimes reconciliation. Here are just a few of them. There are many of them. The National Society for the Protection of Children, Action for Children, and from the US law firm Flint Advertising as a specialist legal advice in nursing home neglect and abuse. Which leads to another aspect of neglect. Not just that those that have suffered neglect are appropriately cared for, but there is also justice, which means a need to include prevention so that it doesn't happen again, and perhaps that fair and equitable compensation is paid in recognising the impact and the injustice of that neglect. Justice for Baby P or Victoria Kilimbie are two of the most high-profile cases which have become synonymous with the most horrific child abuse, but also with the attempts to reform the system, with perhaps apparently limited effect, so fewer tragedies happen in the future. This means rooting out the forms and procedures that led to neglect by officialdom and employees, social workers, teachers, care workers, nurses, doctors, the police, the servants of the state, in the institutions of the NHS, education, the police force, of duty and responsibility, effective communication and attention to detail, of not failing to report or missing the signs of neglect, new training and protocols, justice as systems, legal requirements, controls and accountability to reduce human error and inaction. But it also extends to companies who have a duty and responsibility of care and are held culpable and accountable and are punished by being proved neglectful by fines, compensations and imprisonments. The British company and holiday firm Thomson's recently, after a long and costly court battle, admitted responsibility of neglecting a gas boiler that killed two children and have paid significant amounts of compensation and suffered huge damage to their reputation. Justice prevailed. The Herald of Free Enterprise disaster at Zeebrugge that cost 193 lives because the bow door had been neglected to be left open so that when it left harbour, the water rushed in and the ferry capsized. It was not just the crew, but the company that were in the dock. And it set a precedent that corporate manslaughter is legally admissible in English courts. And lastly, the Bhopal tragedy in 1984 that cost the lives on the night of 2,259 people and probably over 8,000 subsequently. Not till 2010 did 7 ex-employees, including the chairman, were convicted of causing the death by negligence and sentenced to 2 years imprisonment. The man at the top took the fall too, but issues around adequate compensation remain a matter of campaign. They all see neglect not just as in caring for the victims, which can involve a more compassionate human element, but justice often based on systems and blame, where prevention is designed so that it relies not on people waiting to do the right thing, but supervised and policed to ensure they do the right thing and suffering the consequences if they do not. So let's look at the text. Jesus has been invited to lunch by a curious Pharisee, a very religiously strict person, who is amazed and marvelled at the fact that Jesus doesn't wash his hands before eating. Although he doesn't say anything, Jesus picks this up. This is where Jesus' neglect is rooted. Not in the law courts or the failure to follow procedure, but what is going on in the inside. So he cuts across the politeness of cultural attitudes to mundane respectability, which is being used as a smokescreen and a place for hiding unfairness and hard-heartedness linked to hoarding, by some very truculent criticism of what we fail to pick up. Not so much neglecting to wash your hands ready for lunch, but for a far more serious form of neglect, which people, and perhaps particularly religious people, can easily slip into as a mindset. Verse 39, Jesus says, "You Pharisees clean the outside of your cup and plate, but inside you are full of violence and evil. Fools, did not God, who made the outside, also make the inside? But give what is in your cups and plates to the poor, and everything will be ritually clean for you." Now, this remaking of labels is a clear part of Jesus' ministry. Removing the label unclean, placed on things that were clean. Jesus made clean things out of truly unclean things. People indwelled by unclean spirits, driving them to seek the company of the dead. People caught in the snares of wrongdoing who harm others to benefit themselves, now forgiven and transformed. Central to this is the source of evil, including dirt, does not lie outside a person, but inside a person. Jesus said, "There is nothing that goes into a person from the outside which will make him ritually unclean. Rather, it is what comes out of the person that makes him unclean." And it is this pursuit of false purity that emerges as a central aspect of sin. And the normal result of this is thus a neglect, a failing to pick up of what, or rather who, God intended us to include: the poor. The wrong things, the wrong people are excluded: the poor and the care for the poor. But this is not on some legalistic and accountable bean-counting exercise via almsgiving or charity or as a religious duty. It's mirrored in Islam with the idea of haram, things that are forbidden, and zakat, as alms as a duty, but it's drawn from inside. Spirituality and economics are intertwoven. The law, the prophets, and the worship in the Old Testament tie these things together. And Jesus teaches in the New Testament, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The New Testament church lived and taught that discipleship had clear economic consequences. What they and others after them have included as the practice of mutual aid. That is, they continued to own property and possessions, but made these available to others in need. It is different from charity, as it is linked to justice, not just to offset the worst effects of an unjust system, but in recognizing the prior claim of others in need to what we possess. So John writes in 1 John 3:17, "If we are rich and see others in need, yet close our hearts against them, how can we claim that we love God?" If this is true, it confronts the pervasive individualism in Western society, where our possessions belong to us and are jealously guarded. It reminds us that together we need to realize each other's help in discerning and resisting the economic issues of our culture. It raises questions about what we retain and our lifestyle, and how we embrace countercultural values of simplicity and contentment, equality and enough. Yet it is done on the basis of receiving and giving. It is not all in one direction, because this can lead to dependency and disempowerment. But mutual aid is giving each the dignity and recognition through compassion and the sharing of wealth in the face of need. It's therefore not at arm's length, but by active relationship in relating to one another. So it's not about procedures, but about people. Now the picture here is some mutual aid in action, which is the Amish barn building day, where the whole community gets involved to build a barn. And as you can see, it's at the front row is being supervised by the women. This point about justice as against almsgiving or tithing is important, and it's something that Jesus goes on to underline. "How terrible for you Pharisees! You give a tenth of the seasoning herbs, such as mint and rue, and all the other herbs, but you neglect justice and love for God. These you should have practiced without neglecting others." Now, I've sometimes wondered what rue is, so I've given you some background on the screen as to the herb, rue. I think I'm not going to read it through. You can do that. But I think you'd probably agree with me that it would be best to give all of it away, not just a tenth, because it's reasonably toxic stuff. As I said at the beginning of the talk, that love for God and doing justice are linked. It would suggest that if you are not truly loving God, then it is highly likely that you will also fail to pick up or neglect doing justice. Mutual aid, loving God, doing justice, faithfully attended to and not neglected, will all go together. You're also more likely to avoid unnecessary, even harmful pursuits in being consumed with obeying rules of false purity and mislabeling what God has called clean as unclean, and as clean what God regards as unclean. And this leads to the kind of worship God is looking for, echoed in Isaiah 58. They worship me, Isaiah writes, the people of Israel, every day, claiming that they are eager to know my ways and obey my laws. They say they want me to give them just laws, and that they take pleasure in worshipping me. The people ask, why should we fast if the Lord never notices? Why should we go without food if he pays no attention? God's reply to this complaint is, the kind of fasting I want is this: remove the chains of oppression and the yoke of injustice, and let the oppressed go free. Share your food with the hungry, and open your homes to the homeless poor. Give clothes to those who have nothing to wear, and do not refuse to help your own relatives. You can't legislate for this. It comes from the inside, a point made in Amos chapter 5. Make it your aim to do what is right, not what is evil. Hate what is evil, love what is right. Stop your noisy songs, I don't want to listen to your harps. Instead, let justice flow like a stream, and righteousness like a river that never goes dry. So to our last slide. Individually and as a church, we need to model right relationships. And this is not easy. But whoever said it was going to be easy? It is part of a disciplined life where what Jesus taught is not neglected or failed to be picked up on, but lived through. Not on the basis of rules and procedures, rituals and legal responsibilities, but from the inside out. The giving to those in need is based on the justice of mutual aid and compassion, not charity. And as we give to food bank, for instance, that is to be our motivations. But in our Loving the World, which is the series that we're looking at this year, as God loves the world, we have found God to be the lover and the true source of justice. And therefore, we work with others to impact the world around us, with those who work with and of the poor. Some of those labels are up there, or logos: Tear Fund, Fair Trade, Christian Aid, and the Forgive the Debt campaign, Jubilee 2000. These are all legitimate means of loving God and loving justice. But we need not to forget what is happening in our own land and on our own doorstep. And Church Action and Poverty seeks to address some of those issues, for instance. The talk began with a simple word, neglected, as a question. Could it have been a statement? Or actually, could it have a better title been struggling to be faithful, loving God, loving justice? I leave you to decide.